here on News 101.
Right here on News 101.
Right here on News 101.
What motivated you to become a candidate in the provincial election?
The media portrayal of last week's protest that resulted in polarizing images of black-clad activists taking to the streets.
He was just explaining to us the reason why they wanted to show this film on campus.
The official stance is that we are for the Olympics.
News 101 reporter Brad Pepping was there.
By discriminating against homeless people in Vancouver, there's a disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people as well as people with disabilities.
I was pretty outraged. I mean, it is outrageous.
In-depth coverage from an alternative perspective.
You're listening to News 101, Vancouver's only live, volunteer-produced, student and community newscast, offering you local, national, and international news from an alternative perspective.
Today is Friday, September 14th. I am Chirag Mahajan. You are listening to News 101 here on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting to you live from the University of British Columbia to our UBC campus, to the residents of Vancouver, and to listeners of our newscast and podcast on our website, citr.ca. Good evening. It is 5:11 and time for another hour of independent news. Our headlines will cover local news from Metro Vancouver, provincial and federal news from across Canada, as well as news from around the world. All this plus your science segment for today by Sarah Chow, as well as your weekly health segment brought to you by our health team, Dietetic Intuition. All this plus your weekend weather forecast brought to you by the UBC Storm Club right here on News 101, your source for independent news. And we start off with our international headlines brought to you by Democracy Now!
This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We're on the road in Pittsburgh. Protests generated by an American-made film that mocks the Prophet Muhammad continue to flare for a fourth day across the Middle East and North Africa. In Egypt, police in riot gear used tear gas against demonstrators hurling rocks at the U.S. Embassy. The Muslim Brotherhood canceled a million-man protest scheduled to follow Friday prayers, but protesters continued to gather and some reportedly moved to burn an American flag. In Yemen, protesters breached a security wall, set fire to a building inside the U.S. Embassy compound Thursday. Four protesters died while dozens of people were injured as security forces clashed with the demonstrators. Protests against the film have erupted in multiple other locations, including Bangladesh, Malaysia, Indonesia, Iraq, Iran, Jordan, Sudan, Tunisia, Israel, and the Gaza Strip. U.S. authorities, meanwhile, have officially identified the key figure behind the anti-Islam film Innocence of Muslims that sparked the protests. Nakula Baseli Nakula is a 55-year-old Southern California resident with a checkered past involving drug convictions and bank fraud. He was sentenced to nearly 2 years in prison in 2010 for financial crimes and is barred from using the internet without approval under the terms of his supervised release. He told the Associated Press he's a Coptic Christian. Meanwhile, an actress who participated in the film said actors were deceived about the nature of the video and did not realize it was anti-Islam. Instead, they were given a script entitled Desert Warriors that was purported to be about life in ancient Egypt, but words like Muhammad and other references to Islam were dubbed over their voices after the filming. New details have emerged about the attack in Libya that killed U.S. Ambassador Christopher Stevens and three of his staff on Tuesday. A senior Libyan official now says militants may have used the protests against the anti-Islam film as a cover to attack the consulate. According to the official, the attack on the embassy was the first part of a two-pronged attack timed to coincide with September 11th. Militants later raided a safe house in the compound right as U.S. and Libyan security forces arrived to evacuate the staff. Libyan authorities say they've arrested four suspects. President Obama invoked the Libya attacks during a campaign stop in Golden, Colorado Thursday, vowing there would be repercussions for those responsible.
We are going to bring those who killed our fellow Americans to justice. I want people around the world to hear me, to all those who would do us harm, No act of terror will go unpunished. It will not dim the light of the values that we proudly present to the rest of the world. No act of violence shakes the resolve of the United States of America.
Republican presidential nominee Mitt Romney, meanwhile, continues to be criticized by remarks he made attacking President Obama over his handling of the violence in Libya. A protester interrupted Romney's speech in Fairfax, Virginia, to accuse him of politicizing Libya.
But I also recognize that right now we're in mourning. We've lost four of our diplomats across the world. We're thinking about their families and those that they left behind.
Why are you politicizing Libya?
Such a wonderful, wonderful people. They've been so wonderful and appreciate their service to the country. And so I would offer a moment of silence, but one gentleman doesn't want to be silent. So we're gonna keep on going.
Romney's supporters drowned the protester out with chants of USA, USA. The disruption comes as Mitt Romney faces criticism for using the violence in Libya to accuse the Obama administration of sympathizing with the attackers. Romney's criticism centered on a statement from the U.S. Embassy in Cairo that was actually released before the attacks. Following the disruption on Thursday, Romney went on to criticize Obama's foreign policy and stressed the importance of U.S. military power.
As we watch the world today, sometimes it seems that we're at the mercy of events instead of shaping events. And a strong America is essential to shape events. And a strong America, by the way, depends on a strong military. We have to have a military. We have to have a military second to none, and that's so strong no one would ever think of testing it.
Public school teachers in Chicago remain out of the classroom for a fifth day today amid signs they're close to a deal that would bring their historic strike to an end. Chicago Teachers Union President Karen Lewis indicated a deal was imminent, but said classes would not resume until at least Monday because the union needed time to approve an end to the strike. Negotiations have centered on controversial school reforms backed by Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel, including a proposed teacher evaluation process the union says relies too heavily on standardized testing. Primary voters in New Hampshire were mistakenly barred from voting this week after election officials incorrectly told them they needed a photo ID. New Hampshire passed a voter ID law in June, but the law was due to be phased in steps. Officials were supposed to ask voters for ID during this week's primary, but IDs were not required to vote until next year. But on Tuesday, some voters without ID were turned away amidst widespread confusion, while signs posted outside polling stations incorrectly said an ID was required. In related news, the Pennsylvania State Supreme Court heard arguments Thursday on whether to allow that state's controversial voter ID law to go into effect. The law could have a major impact on the election in a key battleground state. We'll have more on Pennsylvania after headlines with guests in Philadelphia as well as here in Pittsburgh. In news from Syria, UN Arab League envoy Lakhdar Brahimi arrived in the capital Damascus Thursday as government forces attacked the outskirts of the capital in a bid to root out rebel forces. Opposition activists said helicopter gunships were firing on suburban areas. During his visit, Brahimi is expected to meet with Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, as well as with rebels opposed to the Assad regime. Brahimi has replaced Kofi Annan, who resigned his negotiating role in Syria the end of last month amidst a diplomatic standoff over a conflict that's killed more than 20,000 people in the last 18 months. Speaking Thursday, Brahimi's spokesperson stressed the difficulty of the mission.
The mission is really daunting, and Mr. Brahimi said it as Kofi Annan had said it before. We said it before and we say it again, that there are countries with influence and others with interests. And we implore those influential countries that have clout over the parties to use their influence to curb the bleeding. And this first mission is of extreme seriousness, ending the bloodshed, then moving toward a political phase for negotiation on how to end this. this crisis.
Pakistani authorities have filed murder charges against factory owners and government officials after a Karachi factory blaze killed 289 people on Tuesday in the country's worst industrial disaster. As relatives mourn the dead Thursday, survivors said the factory's owners had intentionally locked the building's main 30-foot sliding door, trapping workers in order to save a stock of stonewashed jeans due for export to Europe. The move reportedly left hundreds of workers trapped in the blaze with just one available exit. Relatives of the victims gathered at the factory Thursday to search for the bodies of their loved ones.
There are bodies lying inside. They're not pulling those bodies out. They're saying the building will collapse. Please, someone go and pull them out.
We just want our man back. I want the father of the children back. They should arrest the owner of the factory. He should get exemplary punishment.
Government data shows the U.S. is continuing its trend of extreme weather, with this summer now officially the third hottest on record for the lower 48 states. According to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the national average temperature from June to August was more than 2 degrees Fahrenheit above the 20th century average. June and August were both warmer than average, while July was the hottest month on record. Meanwhile, the United States continues to be plagued by drought, with nearly 63% of the contiguous U.S. experiencing drought conditions at the end of last month. Warm and dry conditions in the West help fuel wildfires that consume 3.6 million acres nationwide, more than twice the August average. The Federal Reserve has unveiled a series of major steps aimed at bolstering the U.S. economy and reducing unemployment. The Fed announced its plans to indefinitely spend $40 billion a month to buy mortgage debt until the job market improves significantly. It also said it likely plans to keep key interest rates at record lows at least through the middle of 2012. Federal Reserve Chair Ben Bernanke outlined the steps at a news conference on Thursday.
With inflation anticipated to run at or below our 2% objective, the committee has become convinced that further policy accommodation is warranted to strengthen the recovery and support the gains we've begun to see in housing and other sectors. While the economy appears to be on a path of moderate recovery, it isn't growing fast enough to make significant progress reducing the unemployment rate. Fewer than half of the 8 million jobs lost in the recession have been restored. And at 8.1%, the unemployment rate is nearly unchanged since the beginning of the year and is well above normal levels.
Again, it said likely plans to keep key interest rates at record lows at least through the middle of 2015. Bank of America has agreed to a settlement over claims it violated federal law by discriminating against mortgage applicants with disabilities. The Justice Department alleged Bank of America imposed extra requirements on disabled borrowers who relied on Social Security payments, including forcing them to provide letters from doctors. Bank of America has agreed to pay amounts of up to $5,000 to disabled loan applicants. A new report shows the billionaire casino mogul and top Republican donor Sheldon Adelson stands to reap a massive tax windfall should Mitt Romney win the presidential election. According to the Center for American Progress, Romney's policies would save Adelson more than $2 billion in taxes. The savings would come through a combination of Mitt Romney's proposals to cut the rate for top earners, avoid or exempt foreign profits, and maintain low rates on dividends and capital gains. Residents opposed to the New York Police Department's controversial stop and frisk policy rallied in New York on Thursday as part of a nationwide campaign to blow the whistle on police abuses. Protesters from Los Angeles to New York sought to draw attention to police brutality and the disproportionate targeting of people of color. Organizer Carl Dix joined dozens of other protesters in Harlem.
We'll see how the police respond. They may step back and hope that we'll stop after a while and things can go back to normal. But we're determined not to go back to normal, because normal is people being stepped to by the police 1,900 times each and every day in New York City. Most of them black or Latino, and almost all of them doing nothing wrong. That kind of normal has to be disrupted.
In White Plains, lawyers for the family of police shooting victim Kenneth Chamberlain appeared in court Thursday to defend a $21 million federal lawsuit. Chamberlain, a 68-year-old Marine veteran, was shot dead last year on November 19th by police officer Anthony Corelli at his White Plains home after police responded to a false alarm from Chamberlain's medical alert pendant. Despite Chamberlain's insistence he was okay, police broke down his door, tasered him, and shot him dead. One officer can be heard on a recording calling him a racial slur. The Chamberlain family is suing a number of defendants, including the city of White Plains and Officer Corelli. In a packed courtroom Thursday, defendants sought permission to file motions to dismiss the complaint. Chamberlain's lawyers opposed the motion and agreed to amend the complaint. The victim's son, Kenneth Chamberlain Jr., spoke to reporters outside the courthouse.
As far as justice for Kenneth Chamberlain Sr. goes, I'm immovable on my stance right now. I'm going to stay here. I'm not going anywhere. There will be accountability on the part of the city of White Plains and the White Plains Police Department.
That was Kenneth Chamberlain Jr., son of Kenneth Chamberlain Sr. To see our extensive coverage of the Chamberlain case, you can go to our website at democracynow.org. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We're on the...
And thank you to Amy Goodman and Democracy Now! For those international headlines. More headlines and their interviews can be found on their website, democracynow.org. You are listening to News 101 here on CITR 101.9 FM or online at citr.ca, broadcasting live from the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. We are going to take a quick break, but do stay with us for your weekly science segment as well as your local weather update.
Shindig is back. CITR's annual Battle of the Bands spans 13 weeks and 27 bands. Past participants of Shindig include the Pack AD, 3 Inches of Blood, Japan Droids, Yusei Party, and so much more. The second night of Shindig takes place September 18th at the Railway Club, starting at 9 p.m., featuring Nomadics, Sean Stibbards, and Teapot Hill. For all the details, search CITR Shindig on Facebook or go to citr.ca.
Become a friend of CITR and get great discounts in the Main Street area at
Antisocial Skateboard Shop, Devil May Wear, Flaming Angels Boutique, Lucky's Comics, Neptune Records, Red Cat Records, the Regional Assembly of Text, RX Comics, Temple of the Modern Girl, and the Wallflower Modern Diner.
It pays to be a friend of CITR. To learn more, come visit us in room 233 of the sub on UBC campus or check us out online at citr.ca.
And welcome back to News 101 here on CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Chirag Mahajan and your sole host for today. We just heard our international news and we now go to our science segment called Simply Science by Sarah Chow.
This is Simply Science, bringing you your science news. I'm Sarah Chow. Hello, and welcome back, students, to a brand new school year, full of studying. Well, more like sleepless nights full of cramming. But that's not necessarily a good thing if you want to get good grades. According to researchers at UCLA, sacrificing sleep for extra study time is counterproductive. But wait, doesn't extra study time equal to getting good grades? Well, not according to this study. For 14 days, researchers asked 535 high school students to report on how long they studied, slept, and whether they understood what was taught in class the next day, or how they did on their test or quiz. They found that those who slept more hours per night than their peers had higher grades and did better on tests. Which explains why I got 2 out of 30 on my chemistry midterm in first year. Anyway, lack of sleep is associated with greater fatigue the next day, which makes learning difficult. This is because sleep deprivation decreases activity in the hippocampus, a zone in the brain linked to memory processing. Skipping out on sleep can also raise stress hormone levels in the brain, disturbing nerve activity that is associated with memory problems. Now, I'm not saying studying less and sleeping more will give you good grades. What I'm saying is spread out your studying across days instead of cramming, because sleeping shorter hours not only gets you poor grades, it can also mess up your body's natural rhythm and increase your waistline. Our bodies follow a natural rhythm called a circadian rhythm that follows a 24-hour cycle, which coincidentally follows the rotation of the Earth. But as our lives get busier and busier and we push our bodies to the limit by sleeping less, eating meals at irregular times of the day, and exposing ourselves to artificial light so we can work at all hours of the day can mess up our internal synchronization, leading to something called circadian desynchrony. This disrupts systems in the brain that regulate metabolism. When the body's metabolism goes out of sync, and studies have shown, this leads to obesity and diabetes. So to avoid your body going out of whack, especially if you're a student, make sure you eat regularly, get plenty of sleep, and get out and exercise, because you do want to avoid the freshman 15.
For the love of me, I cannot remember what made me think that curly fries wouldn't go straight to my thighs. For the life of me, I cannot believe we multiplied all our chins. We got fat as freshmen.
Oh, yes. The freshman 15, where freshmen gain weight in their first year of school as they adjust to their new university life. Now, putting on a little weight may not seem such a big deal, but it has some pretty big consequences. Gaining as little as 1.5 pounds per year is enough to raise blood pressure by 3 to 5 points, which increases one's risk of heart disease. Over 1 year, researchers at the University of Illinois measured changes in body weight and body mass index in 795 university applicants who were between the ages of 18 to 20 years old. They found 25% of applicants who gained 5% or more weight had higher blood pressure than those who didn't. And this change was more significant in women than men. But don't worry, this effect is reversible. Women who lost 5 pounds or more were able to decrease their blood pressure as well as decrease their risk of heart disease. So what have we learned so far in this week's edition of Simply Science? Well, cramming extra study time instead of sleeping will not give you better grades. Maintaining a regular eat, sleep, exercise routine will keep you away from heart disease, obesity, and the freshman 15. That's it for this week for Simply Science for CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, British Columbia. I'm Sarah Chow.
And thank you to Sarah Chow and that segment. We now go to our health segment brought to you by our health team, Dietetics Intuition. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM or online at citr.ca.
Welcome to your weekly health beat on CITR 101.9 FM.
It's Dietetic Intuition, your source for precise nutrition advice.
What are you going to hear? We'll bust nutrition myths, give tips, do book reviews, as well as interviews, you name it. And now here are your dietetic students, Andrea, Jessica, and Sharon, for this week's segment. Hi everyone, this is Andrea speaking. Thanks so much for joining us on this Monday afternoon. Today we're making this segment really practical and full of quick and easy lunch ideas to ease back into the business of being back to school. Ethnic variety is the theme for today's segment, and this will serve as a reminder to all the great food out there available in the marketplace and may also help keep your lunches interesting so you don't eat out as often. So talking about protein and what other things you can eat if you're tired of eating the same old chicken salad sandwich. Soybean and salads over chickpeas is a great idea if you're looking to add more protein and you're a vegetarian. Grilled tofu instead of hard egg. We have a great recipe which will be on the blog for gado gado, and Malaysian / Singaporean salad which combines both things, and that is delicious. Tandoori chicken over a regular salad with a little drizzle of olive oil because the meat will be seasoned enough is another alternative. And soups. Instead of a normal soup and crackers for lunch, make a batch of lentil soup or dal and make pappadum on the side for your cracker.
Alrighty, so for the grain portion of your lunch, try roti instead of white bread or other processed white breads like white wraps, or try whole wheat teff wraps. Teff is a grain from Ethiopia, and you can get whole wheat teff wraps at IGA, for example. Kamut and spelt grain instead of white rice, and try some red quinoa, how about? We all have seen regular quinoa, but red quinoa is pretty cool to use in a salad, for example. Try whole wheat couscous instead of regular couscous, or instead of white rice for salads. So moving on to the dairy portion of your lunch, try kefir instead of yogurt at breakfast. Dahi with grilled vegetables or raw instead of ranch dressing or tzatziki. But tzatziki is pretty tasty, so. For fruits and vegetables, guava, try that instead of apple. It gives a nice crunch. Jicama also gives a nice crunch with dressings, like having it in the form of a chip. Or you can even incorporate it into a salad. And for noodles and soup dishes, add one or two bunches of bok choy for crunch and nutrients. For meat twist on a dessert, try plantain chips fried with a little bit of cinnamon.
So these are just a few trade-offs you can do to spice things up and keep the variety in your diet. With a great variety of foods in your diet, you are more likely to meet your recommendations and have fun while eating and sharing with others. So the recipes for the ancient grain salad using kamut and spelt will be on the website. And just to let you know, we got this great recipe from one of our instructors in dietetics, Jerry Kasten, so thank you for that. And then the gado-gado recipe, which is the Malaysian-Singaporean salad, will be on there for roti, dahi, and the plantains as well. So a cool website to check out when I was looking up some stuff for this segment is ethnic-food.info, and it lists ethnic regions out and has a list of recipes in each category. So also on the Dietitians of Canada website, there's a neat spice and herb food pairing chart which may help spice things up in your kitchen. All Recipes is also a great website if you're looking for a bit more variety in your recipes. So enjoy and have a good time cooking and eating.
Thanks for tuning in again this week.
If you missed us, please go to blogs.ubc.ca/dietetics intuition or follow us on Twitter at CITR Health, and even like us on Facebook at Dietetics Intuition. Until next time, stay happy and healthy, Vancouver.
And thank you to our health team for bringing us that really interesting insight into what you should eat. And now we're going to take a quick break, but do stay with us for your local weekend weather update brought to you by the UBC Storm Club.
Become a friend of CITR and get great discounts in the commercial drive area at
Audio Pile, Bone Rattle Music, High Life Records, and the People's Co-op Bookstore.
It pays to be a friend of CITR. To learn more, come visit us in room 233 of the sub on UBC campus or check us out online at citr.ca.
Listen, if they're so hot, how come they're not tearing up the charts, babe?
Because you never play them, babe.
At CITR, our hosts choose the music they play. That means our charts actually reflect the tastes of music lovers, as opposed to focus groups. So if you want to know what's really tearing up the charts, get your hands on a copy of Beatroot or Discorder magazine, or go online to citr.ca. CITR's charts are based on actual spins motivated by actual preference. No payola, no marketing, just good tunes. Refreshing, no?
Cinco Cinco Wednesdays at the Cobalt. $5 cover, $5 draft, and $5 highballs. A weekly showcase of up-and-coming bands, artists, and DJs, where the artists get 100% of their ticket sales. For more information, visit thecobalt.ca.
And welcome back to News 101 here on CITR 101.9 FM or online at citr.ca. We now have your weekend weather update brought to you by the UBC Storm Club and Phil. Hi, Phil.
Hi, CJ.
So what's up with the weather?
The weather.
Well, I was just about to say, as I live through life, I feel that there are days when just reality throws an event to remind me of how fortunate it is for us to be able to live in Vancouver.
Right on, right on.
Yeah, like this weekend, especially this Sunday, it's like one of those days when, as I sit here looking at the models on my screen, there's going to be a large, widespread low system rolling through the Pacific Northwest, bringing precipitation to large areas of northern BC, Yukon, and the Northwest Territories. While here in Vancouver, just a bit south of that whole system, we'll be enjoying a sunlit afternoon with only a few puffs of faint high-altitude clouds. How lucky we are.
That is fantastic. That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. So there is one thing, though. The temperature will be slightly cooler than the norm for this time of the year, despite the sun, because there's going to be a combination of relatively strong onshore flow and a weak upper air trough. But apart from that, it's going to be a great weekend. All right. So those are my forecasts. And here is now the official weather summary for the next 3 days, brought to you by Environment Canada. Today, mostly sunny, high of 21, except 25 inland, UV index of 4 or moderate. Tonight, a few clouds, low of 10. Saturday, a mix of sun and cloud, becoming sunnier in the afternoon. High of 20, 24 inland. And finally, Sunday, sunny, low of 10, slightly cooler than the norm. High of 20, except 24 inland. So, yeah, that sums it up. For the weather of this week, reporting for News 101, I'm Phil Chang from the Storm Club.
Thank you, Phil. That sounds fantastic that we're missing that storm.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Thank you, CJ.
No problem. Have a good weekend. And once again, thank you to Phil and the UBC Storm Club for bringing us that weekend weather update. You are listening to News 101 here on CITR 101.9 FM, and it is now time for provincial and national headlines. The Sierra Club says BC is vastly underreporting its greenhouse gas emissions by not counting pollution from forest and fossil fuel exports, but the province's environment minister says it doesn't need to report emissions it can't control, and the club is playing politics with the issue. In a report released Thursday, the Sierra Club says the province's greenhouse gas emissions would quadruple when exported products are added in. The organization says the BC government has reported that the province's 2010 emissions dropped by 4.5% to 62 million tons, but the province's annual emissions are actually more than 250 million tons when pollution from forests and fossil fuel exports are included. The report says proposals for the Northern Gateway oil pipeline and the new natural gas terminals and coal mines would add another 400 million tons of greenhouse gas emissions a year. The BC government has struck a deal with the Haisla First Nation that the province says could help fast-track a liquefied natural gas plant near Kitimat. The agreement would allow the purchase of lease of land that will enable the Haisla to work with the industry to develop both the plant and an export terminal on Douglas Channel. The deal is part of the BC government's natural gas strategy launched late last year that would see three plants built on the coast to develop liquefied natural gas for export to Asia. Aboriginal Relations Minister Ida Chong said the deal is the key to unlocking a whole new natural gas export industry in the province. The agreement with the Haisla would allow for the lease or sale of up to 700 hectares of Crown land near the Douglas Channel by the district of Kitimat on BC's northern coast. Haisla Nation Chief Councillor Elise Ross said the agreement gives the First Nation the certainty it was looking for around the government's liquefied natural gas proposals. In other mining news, Canadian mining giant Teck Resources Limited has admitted in a U.S. court that effluent from its smelter in southeast British Columbia has polluted the Columbia River in Washington State for more than a century. Tech Resources Limited subsidiary Tech Metals made the admission of fact in a lawsuit brought by a group of American Indian tribes over environmental damage caused by the effluent discharges dating back to 1896. The agreement, reached on the eve of the trial initiated by the Colville Confederated Tribes, stipulates that some hazardous materials in the slag discharged from the Tech smelter in Trail, BC, ended up in the upper Columbia River south of the border. Tech Resources said the agreement is expected to lead to a court judgment in favor of the plaintiffs. However, the court has yet to decide the extent of any and what, if any, damages the company will have to pay. The BC government has hired a former attorney general to oversee the province's grilling of Enbridge on its proposed Northern Gateway Pipeline project. Premier Christy Clark says Jeff Plant will lead the province's legal team during the cross-examination of the company at the joint review panel hearing currently underway in Edmonton and follow-up hearings in BC. Premier Clark says Jeff Plant is one of the best legal minds in the country and will help BC get the answers it needs about the proposal to build a pipeline from Alberta to a tanker port in Kitimat. Premier Clark says the impact of the pipeline is vital to British Columbians and there's no price that can be put on environmental protection. Plant says the cross-examination in Edmonton will focus on Enbridge's financial and corporate capacity to deal with oil spills, while the later hearings in Prince George and Prince Rupert will focus on technical questions involving the handling of spills on land and at sea. The Conservative government announced on Friday it will no longer be a champion of asbestos on the world stage, effectively conceding the end of the asbestos industry in Quebec with a promise of up to $50 million to diversify the economy of the mining communities. Industry Minister Christian Paradis, who represents a riding at the heart of Quebec's asbestos mining region, said he didn't want to abandon the industry, but said Parti Québécois leader Pauline Marois left Ottawa no choice. During the summer campaign, Marois, who is now Premier Designate of Quebec, promised to cancel an $58 million government loan to revive the Jeffrey mine, signaling the end to Quebec's long history of asbestos production. The federal government's policy change of heart, unveiled in Thetford Mines by the government's Quebec lieutenant, means Canada will no longer block international efforts through the United Nations Rotterdam Convention to place limits on the export of asbestos. In radio news, the Canadian Radio, Television and Telecommunications Commission, or CRTC, has reopened public consultations on the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation's upcoming television and radio license renewal. Hearings on CBC Radio Canada's license renewal will begin November 19th in Gatineau, Quebec. The deadline to submit interventions or answers is October 5th and the broadcaster must respond to them by October 15th. CBC's license renewal hearings were originally scheduled for September 2011 but were postponed in order to give the broadcaster sufficient time to gather data the CRTC needed as well as figure out its future operating budget. The hearings were then scheduled to take place in June 2012 but were once again postponed as the federal budget loomed and CBC faced uncertainty as to its funding moving forward. The federal government slashed CBC's budget by $115 million over 3 years in its budget released in March. A further financial challenge to the broadcaster is CRTC's recent decision to phase out the Local Programming Improvement Fund over the next 2 years. CBC received $40 million annually from the fund, which was spread out among 20 stations. When asked in an interview with JSource, CBC Vice President and Chief Regulatory Officer Stephen Guitton would not comment on any specific changes that may come to these recipient stations in the absence of the LPIF funds. In environmental news, environmentalists are organizing what they're calling the, quote, largest act of peaceful civil disobedience, end quote, in Canada to protest the proposed Northern Gateway oil pipeline from Alberta to the BC coast. Greenpeace Canada says a mass sit-in planned for the front lawn of the BC legislature in Victoria on October 22nd is backed by more than 80 leaders from the businesses, First Nations, environmental, labor, and academic communities across Canada. The group says those supporters include environmentalist David Suzuki, former Canadian UN Ambassador Stephen Lewis, Council of Canadians Chair Maude Barlow, lawyer Clayton Ruby, author Naomi Klein, and economist Mark Jacquard. Barlow says the protests will show that one can't gut Canada's environmental laws and try to put a price tag on the BC coast without a public response, end quote. Environmentalist Zebora Berman says, quote, the risk of oil spills from pipelines and tankers is too great, and it's time to take a stand to defend the BC coast, end quote. The mass sit-in is aimed building on similar protests last year, including one in Ottawa in September and another in Washington, D.C. in August that opposed the Keystone Pipeline. A new report suggests tuition fees are becoming less affordable for many Canadians, forcing an increasing number of students to take on heavy debt loads. The report from Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives shows that since 1990, the average tuition and compulsory fees for undergraduates have risen by 6.2% annually, three times the rate of inflation. Tuition now costs, on average, $6,186 a year to study at a Canadian university, that is for a domestic student, and that doesn't include the cost of books or food or lodging. The left-leaning think tank, the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives, that is, adds that extrapolating from past growth and announced government intentions, that number will rise to $7,330 in 4 years. In 4 years, tuition for undergraduates will vary from a low of $2,800 in Newfoundland to a high of $9,200 in Ontario. For Quebec, the report shows fees would have gone up to $4,472 if the recently defeated Liberal government's controversial proposals for increases were adopted. That would move the province from the second least expensive to a third behind Manitoba and Newfoundland. And that does it for your provincial and national headlines here on News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM. We are going to take a quick break, but do stay with us for more international headlines brought to you by Free Speech Radio News.
Become a friend of CITR and get great discounts downtown at
212 Productions, Beach Street Records, Blim, Dream Apparel, The Fall Tattooing, The Kiss Store, Heart and Soul Clothing Inc., Hits Boutique, Pacific Cinematheque, Scratch Records, Vinyl Records, Woo Vintage Clothing, and Zoo Shop.
It pays to be a friend of CITR. To learn more, come visit us in room 233 of the sub on UBC campus or check us out online at citr.ca.
And welcome back to News 101 here on CITR 101.9 FM or online at citr.ca. Of course, you can listen to our past interviews and segments on our website, citr.ca/news. I'm your host, Chirag Mahajan. We just heard our provincial and national headlines. We now go back to our international news brought to you by Free Speech Radio.
I'm Jess Burns with headlines for FSRN. Protests continued today in several Muslim countries as anger over an obscure film about the Prophet Muhammad spread. Along with protests in Egypt, Libya, and Yemen, crowds were out in Lebanon, Israel, Gaza, Tunisia, Bangladesh, Kashmir, Afghanistan, Iraq, and Sudan. Smaller gatherings have been reported in Malaysia and Indonesia. In Lebanon, protesters burned down a KFC, and one demonstrator was reportedly killed as a group tried to gain access to a government building. Several other security personnel and protesters were injured. The U.S. embassy came under attack in the Tunisian capital as well. Photos from the ground show black smoke rising from within the embassy. The AP is reporting several cars were burned within the walls of the embassy complex before security was able to push the crowds back. Local news sources say three people were killed and dozens injured. Protesters also burned an American school. In Sudan, demonstrators are being bused to the embassies of the UK, Germany, and the U.S. The Guardian cites accounts that there is an organized effort to transport protesters. One social media post even suggests that some of the buses are state-owned. Israeli police used stun grenades on a crowd of hundreds in Jerusalem as they headed for the U.S. consulate. Several arrests have been reported. Angry crowds in Gaza took to the streets today as well, and many attended a rally called by Hamas and the local Islamic Jihad group. FSRN's Rami Almagari reports.
Thousands of Muslims in Gaza consider the film to be a great insult to Prophet Muhammad and holds the U.S. responsible. At a planned event, angry protesters listened to speeches by Hamas officials and other leaders in the territory. In Gaza City's legislative building, Hamas's Minister of Endowment and Religious Affairs, Ismail Ridwan, told protesters that the violence in some Arab countries is justified. He called on Muslims worldwide to boycott American goods. The territory's Islamic Jihadi group is holding the American government responsible for the film, citing previous instances of insults to Islam. Rami Almagari, FSRN, Gaza.
The Japanese government has released a plan to phase out the use of nuclear power in the country within 20 to 30 years. Before the Fukushima disaster, the island nation relied heavily on nuclear power. But after the tsunami, all the power-producing reactors in the country were shut down for safety tests. The plants have just now begun coming back online, despite stiff objections from activists. Under the plan, Reuters reports nuclear power plants will be restarted in the near future, but the government will then begin to shift its energy profile towards 30% renewable and a heavier reliance on fossil fuels. A court in Turkey today released two journalists that have been held for more than a year in pretrial detention. The Oda TV case is just one of several in which the Turkish government has been using terrorism laws to prosecute journalists. Dozens of others are still behind bars. FSRN's Jacob Resnick reports from Istanbul.
It was a symbolic act of solidarity. Outside the Istanbul courtroom, professional writers and journalists dropped pencils on photos of more than 60 imprisoned journalists. Prosecutors alleged journalists from Oda TV had incriminating files on their computer, linking them to a broad anti-government conspiracy. The defense claims the files were planted by a virus. Oda TV's managing editor, Barış Türkoğlu, had been jailed for more than a year and a half. His wife, Özge Türkoğlu, says the government had targeted her husband's news organization because of his criticism of the ruling party.
All the questions that are asked in there are not related with terrorist activities. It's just basically, why did you write this news? Why did you write this way? And people are seeing this.
The court released the two journalists, but the men still face trial. And the owner of Oda TV remains behind bars pending the next hearing. Jacob Resnick, FSRN, Istanbul.
Reproductive rights advocates in Virginia suffered a major blow today as the State Board of Health reversed their stance on new rules for women's health clinics. The regulations put in place by the state's General Assembly this past spring could mean closure for 20 abortion clinics statewide. FSRN's Brad Kuttner has the story from Richmond.
After the 2012 Virginia General Assembly passed new architectural guidelines for abortion clinics, many women's health providers in Virginia were threatened with financial ruin. But in July, the state's Board of Health voted 7-4 to exempt existing clinics from the new regulations, essentially grandfathering them in. But the victory didn't last long. Virginia's conservative Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli threatened legal action, saying the Board of Health was not in compliance with Virginia state law. Legal experts, like the Virginia ACLU's Catherine Greenier, questioned the authority of Cuccinelli to override the board's vote. Greenier spoke with FSRN via cell phone from today's meeting.
The Board of Health, in its meeting today, is not bound to follow the advice of the Attorney General. It is just that advice. The board can and should continue to vote in favor of grandfathering existing women's health centers.
With today's Board of Health vote to throw out the grandfather clause, Greenier says pro-choice advocates will have a chance to express their concerns at a future public hearing. Brad Kuttner, FSRN, Richmond.
And that's headlines for FSRN. From Eugene, Oregon, I'm Jess Burns.
And thank you to Free Speech Radio News for bringing us those global headlines. And that does it for our program for today. Today was Friday, September 14th. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. If you'd like to get involved or share your comments, contact us through our email, news@citr.ca. You can subscribe to our podcast and listen to our latest interviews on our website, citr.ca/news. For more independent news, please join us on Monday and Friday at 5 p.m. for another edition of News 101. I'm Chirag Mahajan, and today's show was produced by myself. From the entire news team, wherever they are, at CITR, thank you for listening. Stay tuned for Stranded, right here on CITR 101.9 FM.